Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 370. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have another great guest with us today to close out our Dynasty and Prospect Ranking Series. But first, let's bring on my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's good. Yeah, you're right. We've had some really good guests the last few episodes. Excited to continue that trend today. I'm just looking forward to getting some baseball back. We're getting closer and closer every episode. So, ready or not, here it comes.
All right, when this episode releases, it'll be the last day of January, I believe. Yeah, January 31st on Friday.
Crazy.
Recording this Wednesday night. But, yeah, February's here. It's, pitchers and catchers in about, 9-10 days or so. The Cubs are, I think, February 9th, the first ones to officially report. So, yeah, it's definitely coming. But we are closing out this series with closers. Well, relievers, technically. But, a lot of these guys will be closing out. And again, we have a great guest with us, one of our good buddies. He's a senior writer at Fantrax, a writer over at Rotoballer, and Nine Inning Know-It-All, along with co-host of the Fantasy Baseball Beat podcast, a wonderful podcast. And this man is wonderful, Mr. Mike Carter at MDRC0508 on Twitter. Mike, how's it going, bud?
Oh, I'm doing okay, guys. I'm a little raspy, got a little bit of a cold fighting through it here, but would not miss an opportunity to be on with you guys and have a conversation about our favorite topic of all time, relief pitchers.
Yeah, I know you love them relievers. And obviously, Dynasty, the relievers are interesting, to say the least, though they are, in redraft as well. It's a lot of fun names on this list, though. A lot of exciting young arms emerging into bigger roles over the last year or two, so a lot of fun names on the list here to talk about tonight. But before we get into all of those names, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Again, Mike is at MDRC0508. Chris is at Chris Clegg MILB. I am at Eric Cross MLB, and show is at Tool Shed Pod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of Chris and I's personal platforms, dynasty.goat.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. Check out all of Mike's work over at Fantrax and at Rotoballer. And, of course, you got to check out all the great content over on Rotoballer from all three of us and so many more talented people. Use that code TOOLSHED to get 10% off any premium package over at rotoballer.com. I mean, there's a VIP draft kit out now with exclusive rankings and ATC projections from Nick Mariano, Ariel Cohen, a lot of, the number one most accurate industry expert since 2018, prospect rankings, dynasty rankings. Chris and I got a bunch of stuff up there. So many good things over there at rotoballer.com. Also, again, code TOOLSHED, 10% off at checkout. Good deal of discount there to help you out. All right, so let's get into our dynasty rankings here and discussion. We'll start off with our top 10. Chris, who are your top 10 relievers for dynasty?
All right, so at the top, I have one Mason Miller, followed by Emmanuel Clase. I think they're the clear-cut one and two at this point. And I've got Devin Williams and Ryan Helsley and Rossell Iglesias. Probably a little high on Iglesias, but he's been extremely stout on that closer role in Atlanta. Then 6 through 10 is Edwin Diaz, Josh Hader, Yoan Duran, Tanner Scott, and Andres Munoz.
All right. I also have, you know, that same top two. A minor flip-flop, I have Clase 1, Mason Miller 2. Also have Devin Williams at 3. 4-5 for me is Josh Hader and Ryan Helsley. 6 through 10, Yoan Duran, Edwin Diaz, Felix Bautista, Andres Munoz, and Rizal Iglesias. I'm probably a little bit too low. Maybe we meet somewhere in the middle, Chris, here, like 7 or 8 or something like that. I feel like I'm maybe a spot or two too low because Iglesias has been very, very consistent in an era where there's not a lot of guys with that level of consistency in this position. But let's start at the top there. Clase, Miller. Yeah, I feel like people think that, you know, Miller's a lot younger, but they're actually the same age. I think Clase is older by like a month or two, but both of them had phenomenal 2024 seasons. Miller had a 249 ERA, 28 saves, 0.88 whip, 104 strikeouts in 65 innings. And obviously, the massive, massive K rate at 41.8%. And then Clase had a 0.61 ERA, 47 saves, again, over 40 saves again. Third straight year for him over 40, third straight year over 70 innings, but doesn't have like the massive K rate like Miller does. Only had 66 strikeouts in 74 and a third innings. It's only at 24.5% K rate. So a little bit different here, obviously. But who do you value, you know, higher long term here, Mike? Clase or Mason Miller?
It's really interesting because you brought up something that I was going to bring up, Eric, which is that people would tend to think that Clase is far older than Miller, but they're the same age.
Right.
And that's a really interesting point to make in all of this. I mean, Clase has been outstanding for several years. And I'll admit, last year I did take him in several leagues, and that paid off pretty handsomely for me. The K rate, as you said, is not exactly what you would want it to be, but that feels like quibbling when a guy gets, you know, 47 saves and has ratios the way that he does. Miller, I love Miller. I had him too. I had both of them on my Glarf team last year. I took Clase in like the fourth round, and then I took Miller like in the 15th after I took the famous Alex Lang disaster. And before we start thinking that I did too well on that, I got to make sure that I defame myself there a little bit. The question that I have about Miller is really two things. Does he remain in a closer role? You know, they brought in Jose Leclerc. They have another guy there named Michael Otañez that I like a lot, too, that could probably step in and do that job. Does Miller end up going back to the rotation? Does Miller just become the highest leverage reliever? As we talked about before we started recording, a lot of these guys, the question you have is how they're used. If Miller's a closer, obviously, I think he's an edge a little bit higher than Clase for me for dynasty purposes. But I have a question about how he's going to be used and whether, you know, the A's are sometimes going to be the A's and they do silly things. They could try to start him again, or they could use him in the middle of games that they're trying to win and then try to close with Leclerc, too, who's got experience. I don't think that's their best move, but it's something that they could do and something that we as fantasy players have to be aware of constantly. So I would edge Miller a little bit higher, except I just don't know exactly what that role is. Clase, we know he has that role. I do worry a little bit about overusage with Clase. I mean, he's been used a lot the last 4 years. He seems to be very durable, though. When you hear him talk, he likes to get the ball every day if he can. So that does concern me a little bit. But, you know, we don't ever believe what players tell us, do we?
Nope.
About how great they feel or anything like that. But I would probably edge Miller just a little bit higher because of the K rate.
Yeah, that K rate, obviously, like I said, nearly 42%, absolutely insane. I mean, I think it's fair to say that Miller has a bit more upside going forward, and, you know, Clase being the safer of the two. You can't really go wrong. We're nitpicking here. They're both phenomenal. As we mentioned, they're the number one, number two, whichever way you want to put them. I think it's a tier by themselves, and you drop down to that next tier. But, Chris, what are your thoughts about these two moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest difference for me is ultimately the strikeouts you get with Mason Miller, and Clase's safe. Like, I mean, you know exactly what you're going to get out of him. year over year, the ratios are pretty much as elite as they come for a closer. And like I said, the saves are going to be there. I don't think there's really any denying that. I mean, we're now looking at three straight seasons with 40-plus saves for Emmanuel Clase, and he was up to 47 last year, which is crazy. So, yeah, I mean, I think you know if you expect to get a sub-1 ERA, I don't think that's going to happen again, but you can live with those elite ratios out of Clase, given that he doesn't strike out as many, because you're going to get the saves and you're going to get the ratios out of him. Now, with Mason Miller, you know, I mean, the strikeouts are super enticing. Like you said, the fear, though, is how do they use Miller? And I think that that's certainly something that comes to mind, though. And I took him in our dynasty startup that we're doing right now. He was my top reliever. And, you know, I only can hope that he gets the bulk share of saves. He got 28 last year. The league is also a saves and holds, I think, a third. So, like, saves are much more valuable, but you still get some points for holds there. But, I mean, what Miller did last year was insane.
Yeah,
I was not a Mason Miller prospect fan because he's never shown he can pitch as a starter. Like, everybody went berserk on him when he was a prospect, but he had never been able to handle a starter workload. He was never healthy, and the move to the bullpen pretty much did everything that you wanted it to do. He looks like an elite reliever for a long time. You know, I think obviously the team context is not good, so they're not going to get a lot of wins. They're not going to get a lot of saves. But if you get 30 out of Mason Miller, you get 100 Ks and good ratios, I think it's a pretty big win. So, yeah, both these guys are great options. And I think they are, in my opinion, like the easy top two.
Yep. I really hope they don't try to make him a starter again. I think that would be an absolute mistake. We've seen other relievers get, you know, messed up due to, you know, changing roles all the time or trying to make them starters. I mean, we had another one trying to go up to the rotation this year with a Clay Holmes with the Mets, but obviously a little bit different scenario there. But I just remember it was the other way, you know, when Red Sox tried to make Daniel Bard a starter way back in the day, and then screwed him up for like 9 years, and he was like out of baseball for a bit, and then came back with the Rockies, had a nice little late career resurgence. But yeah, it's just I think it's pretty easy to tell that Mason Miller is better in this role that he's in now, and they should just leave him there. Hopefully they will, but. Next name on the list here, when we talk about a big K rate with Mason Miller, this guy had an even bigger K rate back in 2023. That's Felix Bautista with the Baltimore Orioles. He had a 46.4% strikeout rate back in 2023, 110 strikeouts in 61 innings with a 1.48 ERA, 0.92 whip, and closed out 33 games that year. Kind of took over the ninth inning duties later on in 2022, got 15 saves there, had a phenomenal year then, but then had Tommy John surgery, unfortunately, and then a second procedure roughly 12 months ago that was described as a right elbow debridement and ulnar nerve transposition. Don't know what that means, but he's coming back this year. Obviously missed the entire year last year, but was one of them that if he didn't miss time, maybe he'd be in this top, you know, tier discussion with Miller and Clase. So, I mean, it's always hard to know how these guys are going to come back from injury, Mike, but are you still kind of as high now as you were on Bautista? Would you buy back in right now?
Yeah, I think so. I'm actually a little surprised. I thought he would be a little lower down the list for a lot of people just based on the injury. But, you know, Baltimore has really had kind of an interesting offseason. It's been hard for me in certain places to understand exactly what they're trying to do, but I think it's pretty clear what they're doing in the bullpen. You know, they went out and signed Andrew Kittredge, who is a great resource for holds. If you're looking for somebody with holds, he had 37 last year, but this whole thing is set up for Bautista to close again. And Mike Elias did say that they are expecting him to come to spring training without restriction. Bautista was throwing at the end of the season, and there had been some rumor that maybe he would actually be back for the playoffs if they got far enough. That obviously did not happen for a variety of reasons. That would have been really pushing it. But I think that Bautista is going to be back, and I think he's a guy that probably will get you 25 to 30 saves. That K rate's probably going to go down a little bit because it has to. You know, maybe 35%, 36%, somewhere in there, and I think he's still going to be a beast.
Yeah, I mean, assuming the elbow is healthy, which it should be. I mean, we've had pretty good success from guys coming back from from one Tommy John. You know, second one's a different story. But yeah, he was absolutely filthy in 2022 and 2023. Like, that splitter had a 60% whiff rate. That's just, I mean, that's
unbelievable.
Stupid.
It's like a video game,
you
know?
Stupid.
That's stupid. Like, it had a 120 batting average against, 160 slug. He had to give up one extra base hit on it. Threw it 247 times, gave up a random home run on it. That was it. No doubles, no triples, only 9 hits in 78 plate appearances. Thing had a 60.2% whiff rate. And the fastball, it was 99.5 miles an hour with a 37.8% whiff rate and a 154 batting average against. So it's like, those two pitches he threw about 95% of the time, threw an occasional slider to righties, but which was also pretty good, you know, 63% whiff rate on that too. It's just like, stupid numbers here with Bautista. And still only 29 years old, only a few years older, you know, 2-3 years older than Classe and Mason Miller too. So yeah, I was really high on Bautista, had a couple of shares of him and was very unfortunate when he went down. But yeah, I'll definitely be buying back in myself. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I think it is a good buying opportunity. Obviously, we want to see what he looks like coming back, and that's obviously a question, but I think we know the upside's there with Felix Bautista. We know there's going to be plenty of opportunities for saves. I mean, that's a good baseball team. Everybody can say what they want to about what they've done. That's still a really good baseball team at the end of the day.
Yep.
And I think it's a 90-plus win team, and I think there's going to be plenty of close games too, which creates good save opportunities. So, you know, with Bautista, we've seen the kind of upside that he offers, and I'd like to think that even if he's just 95% of himself coming back, then he's still going to be really, really good. So it does create a really good buying opportunity, especially in a dynasty league. I know the redraft price is a little bit higher on him, but it still might be worth taking the shot on investment, just given, you know, he could vault up to this kind of top tier, and I wouldn't be shocked a bit. So, yeah, I think I'm very in on Felix Bautista this year.
Yeah, I won't be shocked if we're doing this episode 12 months from now, and we're talking about him right up there in tier one, and it's a three-person tier at this point. Would not surprise me at all. All right, let's dive into the Los Angeles Dodgers bullpen here, which is getting stronger and stronger by the day. I mean, they don't even, like, it's just, they have four guys that had 15-plus saves last year. Scott had 22, Yates had 33, Kopech had 15, and Phillips at 18. Like, Phillips is like the fifth guy. He went from being the guy. And the guy, I think he was drafted, I think it was like a back end top 10 reliever in redraft last year, if I recall correctly, or at least in that range. And now he's like the fifth guy in that bullpen. It's just insane.
Change real quick.
I know. So you got to imagine that the leader of this, you know, kind of quintet is probably Tanner Scott, but I don't think he'll be the guy. You know, obviously all the names they have in there. So, I mean, I think the biggest name is Scott. So how do you value Scott right now, Mike? And then this, how do you, really all these guys, how do you think this thing shakes out? And do you think there can be value had for the rest of the names too?
Well, it's really a tough thing to kind of predict because, as you said, they have legitimate five guys that have an opportunity there to be able to get saves. They had Evan Phillips too, who was actually pretty darn good there for a while and, you know, lost that job last year. Kopech, it sounds like, could miss a month to start the season. He's having some injury troubles. Scott is clearly the best guy of the bunch, but these are all guys that have experience. Yates is an experienced guy. The Dodgers gave the ball to Trinan when they really needed big outs in the fall against the Yankees. Phillips is there. Kopech will be there. I do think it's Scott is the best pitcher of the bunch. Again, though, similar to what we talked about earlier, does that mean that he's always going to be the guy that's getting the ninth inning? We look at Dave Roberts and we look at how he's managed his bullpen over the course of time. Now, granted, he's never had the tools that he has now, and maybe he views that a little bit differently. But, you know, you could see situations where Phillips would get two saves in a week and then Kopech would get one and then Trinan would get one. And you got a bunch of guys there that are going to get, you know, five to seven saves, it would appear. It's with Scott probably getting, I would venture a guess and say about 60% of those. He's just so darn good. I just don't know that they're gonna waste him in the middle of a game somewhere. I mean, I think guys like Yates and Trinan and Phillips slot in way, you know, better behind him than they do as a closer. I mean, it would be hard to kind of fathom Scott coming in the sixth inning and then Kirby Yates closing at age 38. Like, he's still really good, don't get me wrong, but I think Scott will get the lion's share of the opportunities there. At least I hope, because that's how I'm drafting that. But it's important to recognize that this is probably going to be some level of timeshare where Scott will get, you know, 20 to 25. Yates will probably be good for somewhere to 5 to 10. Trinan might get in there for 5. Kopech could get in there too. Who knows what they do with him? Kopech was really good when he was with the White Sox in that two-inning role. And I think that that's a role that he could fill better than closer. I know some people disagree with me, but he seems a little miscast as a closer to me. His, you know, we talk about fastballs. We were talking about fastballs before, and Kopech's a little flat sometimes and struggles. Doesn't get a lot of movement. He used to, but he doesn't so much anymore. I would venture a guess and say Scott gets 60% of those save opportunities, and the rest is divvy up. And it's going to be really hard to predict on a daily basis. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, I can see this as being a really frustrating scenario, especially people in redraft that already had, you know, gotten those Kopech shares. Like, oh, he's going to be, you know, the leader of this trio. At the time, it was the trio of him,
right?
Him, Trinan, and Phillips. By the way, you know, Trinan, I think, has maybe like my favorite pitch in baseball. That friggin' sweeper is just so disgusting and so much movement on that. I think that's easily one of my favorite pitches in all of baseball, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy. So, and then, you know, obviously Kopech's had his issues too. So this will probably, you know, this will work itself out in some way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Tanner Scott, I've been a big Tanner Scott guy. I was really hoping that my Red Sox would actually, I don't know, remember how to spend money and go out and get Tanner Scott, but no dice. Because he's been, I think I posted this a couple weeks ago, for pitchers with 150-plus innings over the last 2 years, and he's at 150 on the nose the last 2 years combined, he had the lowest ERA. I mean, so that takes out, like, Class A was under 150, so that takes out some of those guys. But just for guys that are still getting good volume, you know, he's been nails. I mean, he had a little rough patch last year, but for the most part, I mean, 231 ERA in 2023, 175 last year. I mean, guy is, you know, look at all the metrics here, they're all pretty damn elite outside of a higher walk rate, which has always kind of been the case with him. But Chris, what are your thoughts on this bullpen here for the Dodgers?
You know, I think it's easy to overthink it, and it's easy to have no idea what's going to happen, but I have a hard time imagining that you pay Tanner Scott that and he doesn't get the bulk share of saves. I mean, this is a team that had 50 total saves last year, so the opportunities are going to be there. They probably get even more saves. I dare say that this team has 55-plus saves this year as a team.
Great point.
And I'd expect Tanner Scott to get 30 of them. I mean, I understand that, like, it could be matchup-based. Like, Scott is a lefty. He could go in the eighth inning and set, like, multiple spots. Like, if there's a bunch of lefties in the eighth, they're going to pitch him in the eighth. But I do believe you pay that kind of money, I just believe he's going to close out a lot of those games. And so I do think it's spread. I wouldn't be shocked if there's 6 or 7 guys that get saves for the Dodgers next year. But I do think that Scott gets the bulk of them. I'd say 30 is a pretty good number for Tanner Scott, and I think you'd be really happy with that, just given how good his ratios are. As Eric mentioned, I mean, over the last couple of years, I think he's got one of the best ERAs and one of the lowest whips in, among all relievers. So, I mean, the talent's undeniable. You pay the man the money. Like, I think he's going to get his reps, and so... Yeah, I don't know who would get the second most saves. Maybe it's Yates, maybe it's Trinan. I'm not going to try to guess that, but I do think Scott gets the majority, and I think that he probably gets double what the next highest does.
It's funny what we just said, because I said 60%, but you were talking about 50 saves. 60% is 30. I said 60%, I was thinking like 24, 25, so we're in the same boat, I think.
Yeah, that's perfect.
And they could be 65, 70 saves. I wouldn't surprise me.
Who knows? It's crazy, right?
I mean, I wonder, they could realistically win 110-plus games. I mean, obviously the talent's there everywhere. I mean, the rotation's stacked. The lineup is stacked. You know, Will Smith hitting 6. It's stupid. But, this bullpen, Scott definitely looks like the guy that's going to be, like you said, Chris, like, they paid him the money. They're not going to pay him the money to come in and pitch the 7th inning. You just don't do that. So, if I just throw some numbers out there for fun, yeah, I'll say like upper 20s for Scott. You know, I'll say like 8 or 9 for Yates. Trinan and Kopech probably like 5, and Phillips like 2, you know, maybe 2 or 3.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny how he was like so, you know, desired last year, and now he's just like, oh, he's the 5th guy. And maybe he'll get some holds in there, so he'll have some value in a league that values holds. But even then, he's so far down the pecking order at this point, his value there even isn't overly high there either. But yeah, loaded, loaded, loaded bullpen here with the Dodgers. All right, before we go on to the next set of our rankings, though, Mike, any top name, top 10 caliber names that you might be a little lower on the most or even a little higher on the most? Someone that you're kind of you feel strongly about one way or the other?
One guy that I always struggle with, and we've talked about him before, and most people scoff when I say it, and they're absolutely fully allowed to do that because it's just one person's opinion. I love Andrés Muñoz, watching him pitch, but, if you're looking for pure saves, I don't know how many people realize that are listening, but Andrés Muñoz has never had 25 saves in a season. His high was last year at 22. The year before, he had 13. The year before, he had 4. And I feel like we're drafting him as an elite closer, and he's an elite pitcher. There's no doubt about that. But drafting him as an elite closer, I want more than that. If I'm taking him as a closer one, I need to get more than 22 saves. And I think that, he's 25. I always forget that, too. And, with new manager there, with Dan Wilson being in charge, maybe he does that a little bit differently. But Scott Servais, had a tendency to throw Matt Brash out there and other guys like that. And sometimes Muñoz wasn't getting the save. So I wouldn't say that I'm down on him. I would just say that buyer beware on that. If you're looking for a guy that's going to get 35 saves, he's just not ever done that. And so that's a guy that I've always been a little bit lower on than others. Another guy that I'm lower on than people, too, is Ben Joyce. I think he's fantastic. Another guy, I saw him pitch live last year at Sox Park, the only game that I went to, by the way, at Sox Park. And I'll let you guess what they did. Do you think that they won or do you think that they lost?
they did
lose. Yeah. They pulled a loss from the jaws of victory. Ben Joyce is a really interesting guy to watch pitch, but he doesn't have that elite K rate. And I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but somebody said to me today, there was some talk about why he doesn't miss more bats than he does. Here's another guy who's only 24. He obviously throws the ball incredibly hard. There's a lot of people that think he's going to be the full-time closer there, and people are speculating him for 25 to 30 saves. And boy, I just am not sure. There's another guy we were talking. Chris brought up, you pay people. They got Robert Stevenson coming back off of injury too, and I think that they're going to use him at some point. So I'm not totally convinced that Ben Joyce is the A1 closer in Los Angeles. I don't know what you guys think about that.
I mean, I don't know. Ben Joyce is so weird. He throws a million miles an hour, but there's more getting guys out than just throwing 104, 105 miles an hour. And then people forget how good, Robert Stevenson was before having, going down. He'll probably be back. I mean, he had the surgery late April, so maybe he's back, June or so. But up until then, I think it probably will be Joyce. But then I got to wonder, once Stevenson's back, do they kind of work him back into the mix there? I'm not sure. What do you think,
Chris?
Yeah,
I mean, Joyce hasn't stayed healthy. I just don't trust his health at all. You go back to, even his days at Tennessee, and, there are definitely some worries about his ability to stay healthy, especially when you throw as hard as he does. And I know we can start that argument, what causes injuries? I mean, when you throw 104 miles an hour, you're certainly heightening the risk of an injury. And yeah, I kind of agree. I look at the fastball metrics, and it's just, such a weird shape. It's like a dead zone 102. He averaged 102, which is stupid. And he touched 105 and a half. It's insane velocity, but doesn't really matter if you don't hit the spots. And the whiff rates on that pitch are not particularly great. I mean, it's from a low release height. It's kind of tough to pick up at times. But, I don't know. I'm not a Ben Joyce truther either, to be honest with you. So I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't have that role very long, if he didn't stay healthy. None of those things would really shock me. So, yeah, I'm not all that in on Ben Joyce.
Yeah, it's he doesn't get hitters to chase outside the zone. He had a lower chase rate, 26%, not high at all. Walks are a little bit high, but not terrible. Yeah, it's just weird for a guy with his stuff. I mean, like I said, he doesn't locate it well. The sinker is not bad. on the location aspect, but four-seamer, as you mentioned, Chris, is kind of over the heart of the plate. Slider, even slider as well. He doesn't command any of his pitches well, especially in the four-seam and the slider. So, yeah, I think he could be, you know, good. I just don't think, you know, I think some people think that he might just like ascend to being like the next Mason Miller and being an elite guy. I don't see that happening. But I want to go back to Munoz real quick here, Mike. You know, obviously you mentioned he hasn't had, you know, the big save total yet outside of, you know, 22 being as high. You think that he could, though, this year? You look at the Seattle bullpen here. There's not, like, a lot of competition, it looks like, for that role. You know, Brash is out for the year with Tommy John. Maybe he comes back late. He had it in May. Maybe he comes back later in the year. But there's really, I mean, outside of Munoz, it's, you know, Gregory Santos, Trent Thornton, Colin Snyder. Not, like, you know, not great cast of characters there. So you think maybe this year is the year for Munoz to get over 30 saves?
Yeah, I think it could happen. I mean, I'm one of those guys who kind of wants to see it first before I take a huge risk on it. We don't really know. You know, Scott Servais was one of the people that I would always follow and look at what he was doing with his bullpen and then scratch my head and say, well, I'm not really sure if I agree with that. But obviously he's getting paid a lot of money to make those decisions, and I'm just sitting here in central Illinois, you know, trying to figure out what I'm going to eat for dinner, you know, so. But Munoz could be that guy this year. I mean, he could definitely take a step forward. The skills are elite. Obviously, he's also had some health issues over the course of time, too. Really struggles to be able to stay out there. But they don't really have, to your point. I mean, Colin Snyder was a revelation for them last year. I've been really clear in saying that Gregory Santos is not a closer, even though he was closing for the White Sox before they made that move to Seattle. I don't see anybody there really stepping up. With Brash coming back off an injury, I don't think he's a threat at this point. So it could be the year where Munoz really kind of does explode onto the scene and get those 30 saves and earn that RP1 price tag that a lot of people want to put on him already.
Yeah, that is very fair. All right, let's move out of our top 10 to our rankings 11 through 25 with the recap. Chris, his top 10 was Mason Miller, Emmanuel Clase, Devin Williams, Ryan Helsley, Raisio Iglesias, Edmund Diaz, Josh Hader, Yoan Duran, Tanner Scott, Andres Munoz. For me, I had Clase, Miller, Williams, Hader, Helsley at 5, Duran, Diaz, Felix Bautista, Munoz, and Iglesias at 10. My 11 through 25, I got Robert Suarez, Ryan Walker, Pete Fairbanks, Tanner Scott, Porter Hodge, Ben Joyce, Justin Martinez, Lucas Ursig, Trevor McGill, Jordan Romano at 20, 21 to 25, Alexis Diaz, Cade Smith, Michael Kopech, Kirby Yates, and David Bednar. Chris, who do you got 11 through 25?
And I have Felix Bautista at 11 with a good chance to jump, followed by Lucas Ursig, Ryan Walker, Jeff Hoffman, and Robert Suarez. 16 through 20 is Trevor McGill, Pete Fairbanks, David Bednar, Ben Joyce, and Justin Martinez. And then 21 through 25 is AJ Puck, Porter Hodge, Jordan Romano, Cade Smith, and Brian Abreu.
All right, let's start with Ryan Walker, who I had 12 and Chris had was 13 or there. So both kind of near that top 10 after kind of the breakout year he had. He had a solid 2023, 3.23 ERA. In 49 appearances, but 2024 was the true breakout for Ryan Walker at age 29. In 76 appearances, 80 innings, 1.91 ERA, 0.85 whip, and a 32% strikeout rate. And unlike a lot of closers, only a 5.8% walk rate, so able to keep the walks in check as well. And looking at this San Fran bullpen, obviously Camilo Doval had he led the team in saves last year with 23. But kind of lost the role to Walker, you know, mid-season or so, as he was having some issues, ended up with the ERA pushing 5. Tyler Rogers is in the mix there as well, Eric Miller. But looks like Walker will be the guy to start the year. So, Mike, are you kind of buying the Walker breakout, and you think he can keep that role moving forward?
Well, he's really good, isn't he? I mean, he's a fun guy to watch. He did a lot of different things for that team last year. He even started a game for the Giants last year before they were figuring out what his role was. One thing that they did do today was trade Taylor Rogers, the left-hander, to the Reds, which I think maybe moves Doval into a more prominent role in that bullpen with Taylor Rogers' twin brother, Tyler Rogers, who's there. I think Doval is a sleeper here a little bit because when he's been good, he's been really good in the past. I mean, remember 2 years ago, this is a guy that we were drafting in the top five of closers based on opportunity and based on the fact that he converted them. Walker is a guy who does a lot of things well. Walker could pitch a multiple inning role there and be the high leverage guy. It's about the third time that we've said that tonight where, you know, he could be a guy that comes in the sixth and seventh inning and faces the heart of the order. And then Doval gets the save or Tyler Rogers gets a save, whatever it might be. So it's a little bit scary to me in terms of drafting him in a spot where you're anticipating that he's going to get 25 to 30 saves. I'm not sure that's going to happen. You know, Buster Posey has said frequently that they were not going to trade Doval and that he remained a big fan of Doval. I'm wondering if they're going to give him an opportunity at some point to get back into that role. And that concerns me a little bit for the future of Walker. Now, that being said, Walker could be a great, great guy to have on your roster to help with the ratios, but those are going to regress a little bit, right? I mean, they might be closer to three this year than what they were last year. Still very, very valuable. Still a guy that can get you some strikeouts and whatnot. I'm a little wary until we see spring training a little bit more as to what that exact role is going to look like. But I do really like Walker as a pitcher.
You know what would be really funny is if, like, instead of Taylor going to Cincinnati, like, Tyler just went. Like, the old switcheroo. Well, they'd absolutely notice when they start pitching, obviously.
Yeah, for sure.
He won't be a righty.
Yeah, one,
like,
of six, 169, yeah.
Oh, whoops. It's like, they got the wrong guy.
Tyler shows up like, oh, crap, wrong one. That'd be, just pull the old pulled switcheroo there. But
no, it'd be hilarious.
That'd be fun. That'd absolutely be fun. But, yeah, Walker was absolutely nails last year after he kind of moved into that role, got 10 saves over the, you know, final few months of the season. You know, batting average against was really low. All the expected metrics were right there. Maybe, you know, ERA, xERA was a little bit higher, but... Yeah, the fact that he, you know, it doesn't have like the massive whiff rates, but that sinker slider combination, which was basically his entire arsenal, he threw 6 4 seamers all year. But both sinker slider were very good offerings. Slider had a 38% whiff rate and a 157 batting average against. Kept the ball on the ground. I mean, you limit damage in the air, you limit the walks. I mean, he's not beating himself. That's, you know, definitely the case with Ryan Walker. So yeah, I think I'm pretty much buying in. I think Doval. I went right off Doval yet by any means because he was really good. Yeah, last year was very up and down for Doval, but I definitely would not kind of write him off quite yet. Maybe he, you know, isn't the guy. Maybe he only gets, you know, 5 to 10 saves this year or something like that. But I think Doval could still have a good role moving forward. Chris, what are your thoughts here on you know, Doval, Walker, and the rest of this pen?
Yeah, I mean, Walker's incredibly good. Projections love him. You look at the fastball slider combo and both exceptional pitches. I know fastball's a sinker, doesn't miss a ton of bats, but slider is very, very good pitch. You know, sinker plays well. I mean, it's 96, but it's got some good traits to it that allows him to induce some weak contact and not be hit hard, which is nice. Yeah, I do think Doval comes back to form at the end of the day. Like, Doval was a really good pitcher for a long time. I think pitching's a lot mental, too. So to get a vote of confidence from your GM, Buster Posey, a new GM coming in, that speaks a lot of volume, you know, that they still like and value Doval. And it wouldn't be shocking for him to take a spot over time, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that Walker's probably the guy out of the gate. I think Walker can be really, really good. We saw him be exceptional last season. But I also wouldn't be shocked if Doval got a decent chunk, too. So maybe it's a split, but at the end of the day, like, I think that Walker's the better arm of the two. Going to give you better ratios. It'll be fascinating to see how that plays out. But yeah, I would not pencil Walker in for the entire season worth of saves. I will say that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. All right, next names on the list. Going to a little bit of the young gun route here. We already talked a little bit about Ben Joyce earlier, but also Justin Martinez and Porter Hodge, two exciting young names with the Diamondbacks and Cubs respectively, but both don't have, you know, they'll probably factor into the mix for each of their two teams here, but not being the number one guy. Martinez last year 2.48 ERA in 72 and two-thirds innings. 1.31 whip, you know, walk rate a bit high, nearly 12%. Got eight saves throughout the year, 91 strikeouts in 72 and two-thirds innings for a K rate just under 30%. If you look at the metrics there, you look at pretty savant pages. He definitely has a pretty savant page. You know, sinker and four-seamer, both over 100 miles an hour. Splitter, slider, both just a tick under 90 miles an hour, and both had a whiff rate above 45%. Two very, very good secondaries there with Martinez, but A.J. Puck is in the mix as well, and obviously he's shown flashes of brilliance over the years too, so that'd be a fun little situation there in Arizona. Hodge was looking like the guy for the Cubbies, but now they got Ryan Pressly, who might not be as good as Hodge at this point, but has more experience. But Hodge last year got nine saves in 39 appearances, 43 innings, 188 ERA, 0.88 whip, and a 31.7% strikeout rate. So we already kind of talked about Joyce, so we'll lean more towards Martinez and Hodge here. What are your thoughts on these two, Mike, and how, you know, maybe how their situations play out this year and moving forward?
It's interesting that the Diamondbacks have spent a lot of the winter talking about wanting to add a closer. I don't know that they have a huge faith in Martinez, even though he was really good in the summer and down the stretch. He really faded badly in the playoffs and really looked like he was having some problems with his confidence. And Chris was saying before, like, how much of pitching is mental. He really seemed like he was having some trouble there. I don't know who that guy is that they would sign, Kenley Jansen. I don't know.
Ooh, yeah,
who they would be looking for there. But in this situation, I do like Puck better than I like Martinez. I think Puck is just an absolute, he's just pure filth. I mean, I don't know what you even do if you go going up there against that guy. I watched the late night games, and he is just remarkable. But the Diamondbacks also mixed it around last year, too. You know, they had about eight different guys that had saves. And so I would not be surprised if they did a little bit of mixing and matching there with Martinez and Puck being the guys that are the main guys. But Kevin Ginkle's there, too. You know, he has a little bit of experience there. Ryan Thompson gets a handful of saves, too. I think that they are going to sign somebody. Who that is, I don't know. But I think that they really were in on Kirby Yates before while they were doing the Corbin Burns thing. And obviously that went in a different direction. But the fact that they keep talking about adding a closer makes me think that the starting closer for the Diamondbacks isn't on the team yet.
That's fair. But, Mike, you know that the only team in the NL West that's allowed to sign any relievers is the Dodgers.
Correct. On a deferred contract.
Would anybody be shocked if Jansen went back there? Like, truly, would anybody be, like, really shocked?
That bullpen would just be...
I mean, are they
going to
even use a starting pitcher then? I mean, they could use the bullpen for the whole game. That would be wild. I mean,
maybe you kind of have to, given that all their guys in the rotation, which we talked about this with Eno a couple episodes ago, was obviously there's a lot of risk, a lot of talent, but a lot of risk in that rotation as well with injuries and whatnot. So maybe they'll need to go to the pen a lot this year. But yeah,
a guy like Kenley would make a lot of sense there, right? I mean, you know, they're hoping to compete. He's an experienced guy. That's really the only job he can do in the bullpen is close. They got some other guys behind him that would be really good if they go that route.
Yeah, no, I could totally see that. Yeah, if you get like an experienced veteran like Jansen along with Martinez and Puck, and Puck's almost 30, which is ridiculous to think about. He'll be 30 here in a couple of months, which is insane. But wow. That'd be a really good trio there. I like Martinez a good bit. Yeah, I don't know if he's like, you know, going to be like the guy at any point. I could see both Martinez and Puck getting like, you know, in the mid-teens, you know, 12, 15, 16, 70, something like that saves. Ginkle getting in there for like 5 or 6, something like that. That's how I think about it now. And I like Puck a lot too. I mean, I definitely think he's better in the bullpen. Like that whole starting thing with him was just an absolute disaster. But always loved the stuff there. It's been nasty dating back to his prospect days. With the Athletics way back when. So, yeah, definitely. I like both these guys. I like both Martinez and Puck a good bit. But, yeah, I kind of got to wonder, you know, are they the guy? I've kind of been wondering that as well. Chris, what do you think here between Martinez and Puck?
Yeah, I mean, they've openly said that they're fine with Puck being the closer, which tells me the confidence in Martinez isn't there. Mm-hmm. Martinez is volatile. His command is just not there. He could walk the world at times. And I think that Puck is probably the better arm. And if they give him the role, I think he could run with it. I wouldn't be shocked at all by that. But also, as Mike said, they could definitely come out and add somebody. It wouldn't be surprising either. But, you know, literally the report was, this is from Jeff Zimmerman's Mining the News, that Puck would be his internal pick at the moment, but the decision was far from being made. So, I mean, if they don't get somebody, it might be Puck getting the share of saves. So, yeah, it would kind of be interesting to see how that shakes out. But, yeah, definitely I like Puck better as a pitcher. Just worry about the command with Martinez. And, again, maybe it's somebody not on the roster currently. There's a lot of people still out there as we approach spring training that are unsigned. So, makes for an interesting time. But, yeah, I think that, you know, Puck may be the better value right now, just given that, I think people assume that Martinez is the guy, and he might not be.
I wonder where their ADPs are. I know that's obviously redraft, but I just kind of want to get a gauge here of their ADPs. Let me go check that real quick here. All right, so Puck is going around, actually later than I thought, around pick 280, 290, 300 or so. And Justin Martinez is about 70, 80 spots ahead of that. He's going in like the 215, 220 range, kind of near Jordan Romano, some other relievers. Kenley Jansen's in that range. Kopech, though, his ADP obviously is going to fall pretty severely here. But, yeah, so a little more of a discount there with Puck right now. So, yeah, I think at the price tag for each of them, I mean, Puck, I think, is obviously about, what, 5-6 years older as well. But, yeah, I like both these arms, though. But over to the Cubs, though. Porter Hodge, I like Porter Hodge a decent amount. Chris, I believe you do as well. But now with Ryan Pressly in the mix here, who obviously has a lot more experience in the ninth inning than, you know, a guy coming off his rookie season. You see Porter Hodge still factoring into the saves mix here moving forward? And would he be someone you'd still be looking to invest in long-term there, Mike?
Long-term, yes, I think so. For this season, I think it's going to be Pressly. I mean, Chris said it really eloquently before, you know, they're going to pay him $14 million. I think they're going to pay him to close. I don't think he's going to be sitting on the sidelines there. They've wanted to address that position now for a little while. Hodge did an admirable job down the stretch for them last year. He looks to bump into a setup role at this time, a high leverage role for the Cubs. I think down the road, Hodge could come back and do that. But as we were talking about off air, you know, he's got kind of a weird fastball. I just don't know how that's going to play out for him down the road. I mean, there's a lot of instances where guys have weird fastballs and do okay, but I just am not sure that he's in that echelon of like a, you know, a Corey Kluber comes to mind as a guy who had a weird fastball but figured out a way to make it work. I just don't know. I'm not sure that what Hodge is yet at this point, but I think down the road he could end up getting an opportunity again, especially if Presley's one and done there in Chicago.
Chris, what do you think on Hodge?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, like the stuff I think can be there. He's shown us he can handle the spot, especially down the stretch. But, you know, I agree with Mike. Like, I don't believe they brought in Pressly to not close. It's a weird move, especially for somebody with a ton of closer experience like Pressly. I know he's older. I know he's not been as good the last few years. But I'd bet on Pressly leading that bullpen in saves. Hodge may still grab some, and Hodge may be the better pitcher all year. It wouldn't surprise me either, but I think they brought in Pressly to close, and I'll stand by that. I don't know. I struggle now with Hodge of, you know, how often are they going to give him the ninth? And, right, you know, it may not be as often as we'd like right now with Ryan Pressly in the fold.
Yeah, for sure. I think Hodge is absolutely the better arm at this point, but that doesn't always mean you're going to be the closer. I mean, as we've talked about several times throughout the show, but I think in leagues that value holds, I think Hodge is still an absolute like dynamite option there. Probably will be one of the better options in leagues that value holds, which is a perfect segue into our last part of the show here. And obviously, you know, people talk about closers all the time, but a lot of leagues now play, you know, and have at least value holds in some way, whether it's saves holds straight up or, you know, some one of the variations you can have over on Fantrax where it's like holds are half or third, whatever. So, you know, you got to talk about these guys as well. So, Mike, who are some names that you think get a sizable boost in value in, you know, leagues of value holds? I mean, obviously, Kate Smith comes to mind right off the bat. Sure. You know, maybe one of the best relievers in baseball, but stuck behind Emmanuel Clase. We've already talked about a few other guys with Hodge. Maybe, you know, Martinez will be one, maybe Duvall. So, obviously, 14 guys in the Dodgers bullpen. But any other names you see that get a sizable jump in value in leagues of value hold?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that there's a few guys that you might want to target. Brian Abreu now has a very clear role getting holds in that Houston bullpen. In fact, Brian Abreu had the most holds in baseball last year, despite Ryan Presley also being there. So Brian Abreu is a guy there. Andrew Kittredge in Baltimore should get a lot of opportunities for holds. You said Cade Smith, Hunter Gaddis from Cleveland is another one that should get a bunch. Jason Adam, perpetually underrated. It's a guy that could easily get 30 holds there. Kansas City is going to be interesting. We were talking a little bit about that off air too, with thinking it would be Ursig, and then they signed Carlos Estevez today, but they also have Hunter Harvey. That Kansas City bullpen looks like it could be kind of an interesting situation. And then I think the other guy that I, a couple other guys that I really like, Griffin Jackson, Minnesota, is a guy that should get a lot of hold opportunities. Luke Weaver in New York. Yep. I think we'll get a lot of chances there. Somebody asked me about Jeff Hoffman the other day. I mean, he's clearly the closer in Toronto. I don't think that that's going to be a debatable issue. Boston's an interesting one, too, depending on who ends up closing there. I hate to poke a wound, because I feel like every time I've been on the show with you, we've talked about the Red Sox not spending money or doing something stupid. If Chapman's not closing, he should get a lot of holds there, too. So there's definitely a lot of guys out there that you can take a look at that would help you with that. AJ Minter is one in New York now as well with the Mets that I don't think I mentioned him, but he should get a lot of opportunities there for holds as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And David Robinson, all, you know, wherever he lands is obviously always to get a ton of, you know, saves or holds too. Yeah, a lot of good names. Yennier Cano, I think, was really high on holds last year in that Baltimore bullpen, which is still a pretty – so a pretty good bullpen there, especially with Batista coming back. So, yeah, a lot of good names there. I mean, Boston, oh, man. I mean, I think Hendricks is the guy, if healthy, but maybe they play the matchups with him and Chapman. I mean, maybe they still go out and get another guy, but I don't know at this point. It's, yeah. Maybe that's what they're going to roll with, which, I mean, you know, I'm not going to – I don't like Chapman in general, but he's still, you know, a decent arm in general. Still some talent there. Still can throw hard. I love Hendricks. I'm really just, in general, as a human being, I'm really rooting for Hendricks after all the stuff he had to deal with health-wise over the last few years. So I would love for Hendricks to come out and just, like, you know, beast and go, you know, 38 saves with a sub-2 ERA or something like that. I would absolutely love that. But, yeah, Chapman should get a decent amount of, you know, value there, too. So maybe Justin Slayton, too. He's kind of an emerging arm in that bullpen. Showed some good stuff last year, too, so. Another name that might get into the holds mix for Boston. Chris, thoughts on any of these guys or any other names you want to throw into the mix here?
Yeah. No, I mean, there's all definitely good names. If you play in a saves hold league where they're equal, like, don't pay up for closers. Don't trade for closers. That's such a bad move from a strategy standpoint. Everybody still wants to draft the top closers, but you can literally get the eighth inning guys that are really sometimes just as good, and they provide equal value if it's saves plus holds. Now, if it's saves and, like, saves plus holds, like, divided by two, then I understand paying up a little bit more. You know, the Padres bullpen is an interesting one to me. Jason Adam is phenomenal. Jeremiah Estrada, really, really good last year. So those are two guys. Yeah, those are two guys I'd watch. I mean, Robert Suarez has the closer role. I'd assume he has it all year. I mean, he got 36 saves last year. He was their closer for the majority of the season. So I have a hard time seeing him not being in the closer role, but I do think Adam and Estrada have a lot of value. Both those guys put up really good ratios, good K numbers, and should get plenty of holds. That's another good team, so I'd expect those to be pretty valuable. But yeah, in the general strategy sense, like, everybody, people always ask, like, should I trade for this reliever? Like, literally, if you're in a saves hold league, like, you can just pick up relievers off the wire. Like, you can stream relievers pretty much and be okay in a lot of senses, unless it's a super deep league. So, you know, I think you just play the wire in some cases and get the hot guys, find the guys that pitch the seventh or eighth that have good ratios and Ks, and roll with it. So I know most dynasty formats are saves holds now, so I think that's my strategy, is like never pay up for saves in that format.
Yep, that is very, very good piece of advice right there. One last thing here. I know it's not on the outline, but got to go talk about your White Sox for at least a second here. We talked about probably at some varying level, at least probably 2/3, 3/4 of the bullpens so far this episode. But your White Sox, Mike, I mean, looking at the projected bullpen here, it's a combination of that Snoop Dogg, you know, give a who, and the Conor McGregor, who the fuck is that guy? So you got Justin Anderson, Prelander Baroa, Gus Varland, Ellard. Like, who? I mean, these guys had a combined 3 saves last year. Anderson had one, Ellard had one, and Cam Boozer had one, who was with the Red Sox last year.
Beloved Red Sox, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So anybody to target in this bullpen, Mike?
Yeah, I actually am pretty high on Prelander Baroa. I think he pitched pretty well down the stretch for them in a middle-inning role. They didn't really try to stress him out too much. He's definitely a guy that when he came over in the Gregory Santos trade. They got Zach DeLoach, and they got him as well. The Sox are really high on him. I do not know if he will be the closer to start the year. I would kind of be surprised if they don't sign someone off the scrap heap to come in here and be the closer. And when I say scrap heap, I'm talking like Dylan Floro, you know, that type of guy that has some experience closing that they don't have to pay anything to. I mean, Kyle Finnegan's still floating around out there too. I mean, I don't know what he's thinking or where he's going to go. But Baroa is the guy that I think down the stretch in the second half of the season will take on that role. He's had some trouble with command going back to his days, back to San Francisco. He was a San Francisco Giant first and then Seattle. But Brian Bannister is the White Sox new director of pitching, and he has been over the course of the last year. And they've made some really good progress with their young pitching guys. You guys know that better than I do. I mean, they've got some guys that are coming that look like they're going to be really, really good. Yeah. And I think that they have figured out a way to be able to help him. The last 5 or 6 games, I know it's a small sample size. Yes, I watched many, many White Sox games last year, even though I knew what the outcome would be. I was very impressed with him down the stretch. I thought he did a really nice job. He did a nice job locating. He's got a good arm. Seemed like he was staying on top of the ball and really making sure that he was working through some of those issues. So I think Baroa, you know, is going to end up being the guy. They also really like Gus Varland, and I'm not sure what to really think about him. There were a couple times he pitched where I was like, dude, who's that guy? And he looked really good, and then they brought him back in, and it looked like me throwing BP at the high school. So it wasn't so good. So I don't really know. I mean, I don't think that they really care all that much. They're not going to win a lot of games. They're really looking to develop some of those young guys in the rotation. But Baroa would be the guy that I would earmark, as the guy who's got the best opportunity down the road to get saves there.
Yeah, he was always, really fun, back in his prospect days. It's like one of those arms. It's like, all right, there's definitely a lot of upside here, but you didn't know what it was going to look like. Because he was, you mentioned kind of erratic with the command. Like, could he, stick as a starter back in the day? Obviously not. So, yeah, Baroa, definitely a fun name for sure. But that is going to close us out here. This whole series has been really fun over the last couple of months. We close it out with our good buddy, Mike Carter. Mike, thank you so much again for joining us. We love having you on every year to do this, and we'll have to have you on again soon.
Well, I'd love to do that. And I just always want to say thank you to you guys, because I've known you two guys just about as long as I've known anybody in this so-called industry. Your level of kindness and genuine friendship that you have for people, it just pours out of you guys. And I so appreciate working with you guys and seeing what you're doing and all the success that you're having is wonderful. And Eric, always personal thank you to you for bringing me along to a number of different places when you've moved through the chains and gone to places. It's two times now that you've brought me along with you and helped me find work. I wouldn't probably be doing anything in the industry if it wasn't for you. So I always really appreciate the fact that you brought me along with you to Fantrax and then to Rotoballer. I've had a great time. I can't even believe that somebody pays me to do some of the stuff. It's like kind of nuts. It's something that I would do for free. I just love doing it. So thank you guys so much for having me, and looking forward to spring training kicking off here in about 10 days, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a big reason why I'll always advocate for you. But first off, the feeling is mutual. You're a great guy, great analyst, great human being, but your passion, I'll always advocate for someone that just loves doing this. and just writing and talking about this game that we love. So I'll always advocate for you, Mike. You're a good friend of the pod, good friend in general. We love having you on every year and to have you on more often. Everyone should go and follow Mike at MDRC0508 on Twitter. Check out all of his work at Rotoballer and at Fantrax. It's phenomenal work, even outside of the bullpen. Great stuff from Mike. And then we will be back with you again in a few days. But until then, everyone take care.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.